Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
Mark my words, we will change the way this state does business, and it will start on day one.
It's Eliot Spitzer from his victory speech on primary night, promising to clean up Albany. Did you know that the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU has ranked New York state government the worst example of state-level democracy in the nation? Did you know that the Center for Public Integrity, a watchdog group in Washington, has figured out that the New York State Capitol has more lobbyists per legislator than any other in the nation, 18 registered lobbyists for each one lawmaker? Well, with that, we continue our 2006 election series, 30 issues in 30 days. Issue 26, Beyond Allen Hevesy, How to Really Reform Albany. We'll also talk about where the Hevesy driver scandal fits in. And we have two great guests. Seymour Lachman was a five-term New York State senator who decided not to run for re-election in 2004 because of what he says was the Albany rut. Instead, he wrote a book, Three Men in a Room, The Inside Story of Power and Betrayal in an American Statehouse, written with journalist Rob Polner, published by The New Press. And Suzanne Novak, she is deputy director of the Democracy Project at the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU. Seymour Lachman, welcome back to WNYC, and Suzanne Novak, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
Happy to be here.
The title of your book, Seymour Lachman, is the cliche we always hear about Albany, Three Men in a Room. What does it really mean?
Well, the three men in a room refers to the governor, the Speaker of the Assembly, and the Senate Majority Leader, and that would be George Pataki, Sheldon Silver, and Joseph Bruno.
All right. And Suzanne, the Brennan Center report recently seems to focus mostly on the power that legislative committees do not have vis-a-vis these three men in the room. You want to talk about that?
Sure. That's correct. It's not just the committees. It's really that all rank-and-file members do not have. They don't really have much of a say in their government. All bills are basically controlled by the two leaders in the houses.
Is not a new phrase, right? So the three men in the room happen to be the three who Seymour mentioned. That happens to be the Republican governor, the Republican state Senate leader, and the Democratic Assembly leader right now. 12 years ago, it was the Democratic governor, Mario Cuomo, and the Democratic Assembly leader and the Republican state Senate leader. But people were saying three men in a room even back then.
That's right. It's not particular to the people in office, although the people in office can set the dynamic. However, it's really a function of the rules in the legislative rules that are controlled by each chamber. Each chamber will have an opportunity this January to vote on the rules of their chambers. But as the rules are set now, the legislative leaders have total control over bills and hearings and votes. So a bill is introduced in a committee, and the committees do not get to function like committees in other states, where it's an incubator for ideas, and they can call hearings, they bring in experts, the public can be involved, people take votes on the record. You have universal health care that passed in Massachusetts, gas emissions in Connecticut, all this novel legislation that's solving the problems. In New York, problems don't get solved. Legislation gets introduced, rank and file members can't call a hearing on it. If something's introduced, they can't get a vote in the hearing.
So here are some of the bullet points from your report, in addition to what you just said. It says there were few standing committee hearings, talked about hearings, but including hearings devoted to a specific piece of major legislation. There were no detailed committee reports attached to major bills. Leadership continued to maintain near total control over what legislation reached the chamber floor, what people could actually vote on.
Exactly.
Neither House voted down a single bill that received a vote on the floor. So that means that the leaders were only allowing things even to be voted on that they wanted to pass in the first place.
Right.
Seymour Lachman,
right.
Does that sound consistent with your experience in the
Very
state Senate?
Very consistent with my decade of experience in the state Senate. We actually don't have 212 legislators. We have two. Instead of we have 210, but the other 210 basically listen to the leadership, or otherwise they lose some of their perks and illusions of power. No bill has ever passed the legislature without the approval of the Speaker of the Assembly or the Senate Majority Leader.
And here's another indication of how. From the Brennan Center report. It says the use of conference committees to reconcile similar bills in each chamber remained the exceedingly rare exception rather than the rule. Now, we all hear about the conference committees in Congress, where sometimes the House and Senate pass very different versions of a bill on whatever, and then they get together for sometimes very contentious debate and head-knocking session to come up with a bill that everyone can agree to. That doesn't happen in Albany?
It rarely happens in Albany, and the main problem is it's not institutionalized. So you have all the barriers that you just mentioned, is first getting anything through committee, then getting it to the floor. You finally get it to the floor in both of the chambers. They pass similar bills, and there's no mechanism set up that they must come together. In recent years, we've seen a few exceptions to that, but it remains the rare exception.
The point being that rather than a conference committee involving various members from various parts of the state from the two houses, it's these three men in a room again who get together and reconcile any differences.
That's right. And what's really important about this is that the public is unaware of what goes on. Everything is done outside the view of the public. So in order to pass a bill in each chamber, because it's all unanimous on the floor, all the wheeling and dealing is done in the back room. Nobody hears how their legislator feels or votes. Same thing if you finally get it passed in each chamber and it's reconciled, you don't hear discussion. It's not out in the public. It's the three men in the room.
Suzanne Novak, Deputy Director of the Democracy Project at the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU, speaking there along with my other guest, Seymour Lachman, former New York State Senator, professor at Adelphi University now, and author of a new book, Three Men in a Room, The Inside Story of Power and Betrayal in an American Statehouse. It's issue 26 in our 30 Issues in 30 Days 2006 election series. As we look at Albany dysfunction and what Spitzer or Faso or anyone else might do about it if elected. Seymour, I want to make this a little bit more concrete for the listeners if we can. I think we've gotten through sort of how it works and what the structure is to some degree. What kinds of laws or policies that you think might have been better for the people of New York might have gotten through a more open system?
Well, certainly the rules changes that don't exist, that the Brennan Center has advocated, I completely support. And until the absolute power of the Speaker and the Majority Leader are taken apart, and more power flows to the other 210 legislators, there are problems. Now, why do they have this power, you might ask? And one of the reasons is the budget process. Another reason is redistricting. And if I may briefly speak about that, the budget process is drawn up to confuse rather than to clarify. We have in the legislature items known as member items. These are perks that individuals give to different constituencies.
Pork,
right, exactly, right on target. And no one knows from the budget who gives what to whom, and it's never evaluated. And if you do something that the leadership doesn't care for, your allotment is cut. And just a few weeks ago, the Albany Times Union had an expose of $85 million more that they found in the budget for pork that the Democrats were unaware of.
So pork is one problem. Suzanne, would you point to any specific policies that either have or haven't gotten passed as a result of the three men in a room?
There are many, many policies. There's one case study in our report that talks about a wetlands protection bill that had overwhelming support in the Senate, but it was bottled up in the Rules Committee, and the majority leader prevented it from getting to the floor, so it was not able to be voted on. But I mean,
if I may, the Rules Committee is actually controlled by one person in the Assembly, and the Rules Committee is controlled by one person in the Senate. Guess who those two people are?
Are they the Speaker and the Majority Leader?
Yes.
Exactly.
But New Yorkers know we are facing, I mean, we need campaign finance reform. We need to fix the judicial selection process that the courts just struck down in New York. We need health care reform. Taxes, upstate jobs. I mean, New Yorkers are crying out for changes, but year after year, nothing gets done because of this dysfunctional legislature.
Well, it's not just because of the dysfunctional legislature. I mean, there is disagreement on the issues. We have the people of New York electing one House Republican, one House Democratic year after year. So, I mean, that's got to have something to do with it.
It does have something to do with it. Like Seymour mentioned, all these things are intertwined because redistricting has a large part of that. It is, you know, in New York, the two houses came to a gentleman's agreement about how they're going to draw the lines for their two different houses.
In fact, Elliot Spitzer was written up in the Times on Saturday for proposing to change how redistricting is done. As I'm sure you know, it's now an incumbent protection plan with state districts, with safe districts all over the state. Is this an issue in your book, Seymour?
Absolutely. It's a major issue in the book. A person is elected to the state legislature, and if he listens to the leadership, then it's a lifetime position. If he doesn't listen to the leadership, he can't rise. I remember at a finance committee meeting when I cast an independent vote, one of the leaders came over to me and said, Lachman, you can either rise to the top or sink to the bottom. What do you want to do? And these people are glued to their seats. And if one should lose or two should lose in an election cycle, there's utter panic. So there is this major redistricting problem. And as Suzanne said, the Republicans don't care about the Republicans in the Assembly as long as they control the Senate, and the Democrats in the Assembly don't care about the Democrats in the Senate as long as they control the Assembly.
But Suzanne, your report at the Brennan Center called New York State the worst example of state-level democracy in the nation. But how different is it really from anywhere else? We hear about these redistricting problems for safe districts all over the country. We certainly see legislatures, including Congress, with strong leaders, strong controlling leaders all over the country. Is New York State really so much worse than anything else, or is this just American democracy?
Well, let's hope it's not American democracy to stay. But that distinction and that description came out of our 2004 report that was talking about legislative processes. And what it did, it went through about 15 criteria and compared New York to other states. And it did determine that based on those criteria, New York was the most dysfunctional legislature, and that in other states, the legislative leaders didn't have as such overwhelming control to really lock out all the rank and file members. Now, in addition, you have redistricting problems all over the United States. But in New York, it's so unusual because you have this gentleman's agreement between the two houses such that you have a state where there's such overwhelming support for Democrats in the Assembly, and then you have the other house that's in the hands of the Senate. I mean, that clearly must lead to the conclusion that they're not drawn in any logical fashion. They're drawn such that they protect the Democrats in the Assembly and they protect the Republicans in the Senate.
Although, interestingly, this is becoming such a Democratic state that the Assembly is very, very safe for the Democrats now, and the state Senate could conceivably flip to the Democrats this year if a few elections go their way.
I think it would take longer than this year, but I think eventually it probably will, because the demographics are such that there are now nine Republican senators in Long Island. The Congress people are split, Democrat, Republican, as are the Assembly people. Now, something is being done, and what is being done is they're drawing lines to enhance the position of the incumbents. And they also give member items or goodies to these. It's amazing. I was asked to become a Republican, and I was told that if I did, my $100,000 in member items would could jump to $2 or $3 million.
Really? When was that?
That was about 5 years ago, and four of my colleagues did that. One is still in the Senate. The others are no longer there. I mean, everything is used in order, and there's no accountability, and there's no transparency in regarding laws and actions taken. It's very, very difficult to find out what the truth is.
We're going to take a break. When we continue, we'll bring up the Allen Hevesy situation and ask where, if and where, that fits into this. And I also want to ask if we're focusing too much on the power of the elected leaders when the bigger problem may be the power of the non-elected lobbyists in this system. And we can take phone calls on issue 26 in our election series, 30 Issues in 30 Days, How to Clean Up Dysfunctional Albany, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or email Brian Lehrer Show at WNYC.org.
And I am deeply sorry for the fact that I have failed in providing security to my wife, failed to provide a repayment, a reimbursement for non-security services that was recommended by the Ethics Commission on a timely basis.
A tentative Allen Hevesy from his New York One debate last week. It's our 2006 election series, 30 Issues in 30 Days, coming up in this series. Tomorrow, issue 27, Outsourcing the War, Pentagon Contracting and Its Consequences. Wednesday, issue 28, Is There a War Against the Middle Class? Thursday, issue 29, Polarized America, Is There Any Other Way? But we continue now with issue 26, Beyond Allen Hevesy, What Will It Take to Reform Albany? With former State Senator Seymour Lachman, who is a Democrat from Brooklyn. Brooklyn and Staten Island, now the author of Three Men in a Room, The Inside Story of Power and Betrayal in an American Statehouse, and Suzanne Novak, Deputy Director of the Democracy Project at the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU. And Seymour Lachman, I'm going to show you, if I can find him. Let's see, I had him right here. See, I'm going to show our listeners, too, on the radio, if I can find him. Oh, darn it. Okay, well, I'll look around.
Are you looking
for
this?
No, not for that. I have two brochures here. And these, there they are. Okay, somebody's going to get them for me because they fell on the floor. And I can't get away from the microphone. Here they are. Two brochures. Here, you want to take these? They were both. Go ahead, you can swing around and pick them up over there. These two brochures were both seen at a Democratic Party fundraiser last week. At the beginning of the event was the one with all those photos, including Allen Hevesy's, as well as Spitzer and Clinton and David Patterson, and who am I leaving out? There was, by the end, the other one on the table where Hevesy's picture was removed from what they were handing out. And technically they're funded by different people, but I think we are seeing the Democratic Party in New York State running away from their state controller, aren't we?
Yes, that's quite obvious at this point. What has happened was that a family problem grew into a tragedy statewide for the people of the state of New York, many of whom have supported Hevesy in the past, as I have. And it now creates a position where the soon-to-be, we hope, governor of New York State has disendorsed Allen Hevesy.
Disendorsed,
as I have also. The question is, what's the next step? It's the welfare and the well-being of his family is very important. But the welfare and well-being of each of New York State's 19 million citizens is at least as important.
There's a dilemma for Democrats who may not want to see the office go to the hands of a Republican, Mr. Callahan, but they can't see themselves voting for Alan Hevesy now. So one of their choices would be to vote for Hevesy if he stays in the race that long, with the presumption that either the state Senate or somehow Elliot Spitzer will pressure him to resign or even remove him. And then another Democrat will get in, but not Elliot Spitzer. Now, the New York Times took the opposite position. The Times said, in endorsing Callahan, that the party has to be punished.
Well, I would say in response to your question, Brian, there are actually three things a person can do on Election Day. He can vote for or against Spitzer.
You mean Hevesy?
Voting for Spitzer at all times, but voting against or for Hevesy. And if he votes against Hevesy, he can vote for one of the minor party candidates, whether it's the Green Party or the Socialist Workers Party, et cetera. And besides that, the individual might opt not to vote so that Hevesy's percentage of the vote drops. But there is a...
All of which, though, on a practical basis, either helps Callahan get in or doesn't.
All of which helps Callahan get in. I don't think he will have enough votes to get in, but I think many Democrats throughout the state are distressed.
Right. I don't know if that prediction is so safe at this point. Hevesy dropped in the polls in the few days. At least people are paying attention, because Hevesy dropped in the polls from an overwhelming lead against a completely unknown challenger to just a 12-point lead as of late last week. So I think anything is possible by Election Day. And I want to suspend this conversation here. We will think what we will of Alan Hevesy, and we'll do more on this case later in the week. But here's what I really want to ask you. Are Hevesy's problems a symbol of the dysfunctional democracy in Albany, or are they something completely outside of it, pertinent only to himself?
I think it's a symbol of the dysfunctional democracy in Albany.
You do?
I do. I think that many legislators have exhibited an arrogance of power where there is no power. And the state controller, unfortunately, and I've known him for a long time, has exhibited an arrogance of power where he does have great power, almost total power, in the on the budget of New York State, including the $145 billion in pension funds and other areas, and he is accountable to no one.
How could he be made more accountable?
Well, we can have an independent budget office. We can take some of the powers of the major figures in Albany and divide it up to other individuals or groups. We can have an independent budget office, which does not exist in New York State, exists in other states. But there have to be creative ways of handling this. And people are now talking about impeachment, and we're also talking about the governor's removal of Hevesy if his independent prosecutor recommends that through the Senate. That would entail a constitutional amendment, because a part of that would have the courts taking a position, which they don't normally do. No legislature has ever removed a statewide official by the method that the governor proposes. One governor was removed through impeachment in 1913, and there are no guidelines. The guidelines will be developed as we go along.
Suzanne, has the Brennan Center taken a position just on the structural power of the controller, what Seymour Lachman was just talking about, that the controller's office, never mind whether it's Alan Hevesy or anyone else, is too powerful, and that there needs to be an independent budget office or some other thing as a check and a balance?
We haven't really done any reports or studies of this issue, but have supported an independent budget office. And I think that Seymour is right, just that, you know, all around in New York government, there needs to be more accountability.
All right. My guest on WNYC for Issue 26 and our 30 Issues in 30 Days election series is Dysfunctional Albany Reclaimable for Democracy, Suzanne Novak, Deputy Director of the Democracy Project at the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU, and Seymour Lachman, former New York State Senator from Brooklyn and Staten Island, now author of Three Men in a Room, The Inside Story of Power and Betrayal in an American Statehouse. And before we get to some phone calls, Suzanne, had we been focusing too much in this discussion on the power of the elected leaders, the three men in the room, the governor, the Senate Majority Leader, and the Assembly Speaker, when the bigger problem, or at least an as big problem, is the power of the non-elected lobbyists in Albany?
Well, both are problematic. I mean, hopefully we've been focusing part of this discussion on the 210 legislators who don't have any power, and we want to get them some power. But yes, I mean, the control of special interests in Albany is another huge problem. Brennan Center also released a report in July about campaign finance in New York, which documented that for almost all categories, New York has the highest or close to the highest contribution amounts for those states that regulate campaign finance. And in most places, even if you cut the limits in half, it would still be greater than 95% of those states that regulate campaign finance reform. The result of this is that the legislators can get so much money from single sources, such as lobbyists, that they do not need to be accountable or rely on the rest of the constituents in their district.
Let me show you how much they can get. In 10 years, the lobbyists gave $37 million to the legislators 10 years ago. Now they give $144 million. And you are correct in saying that there are approximately 18 lobbyists to every legislator.
This is a Center for Public Integrity stat figuring out that New York State has more lobbyists per legislator than any other in the nation, 18 registered lobbyists for each lawmaker.
That's true.
So, Seymour Lachman, there's a story that you tell on page 99 of your book about a Monday night.
Is that the book, Three Men in a Room?
It happens to be, The Inside Story of Power and Betrayal in an American Statehouse. Published by the New Press.
Right.
That one. The story that you tell about one night in February 2005 at an Albany hotel. Do you remember it? Where the Republicans who run the Senate and the Democrats who preside over the Assembly convened separate fundraisers in adjacent ballrooms.
I remember it very well.
And what happened?
Well, they both raised a great deal of money. Unfortunately, many of these fundraisers take place in the evening in Albany after the lobbyists and the legislators meet each other during the day.
And it's such a quote-unquote bipartisan system that they set it up in that hotel so that the lobbyists could go from one ballroom
one to
the
other
without even getting in their cars, lobby both, and make campaign donations to both because they know where their bread is buttered.
Absolutely. And not only because they know where their bread is buttered, but it's very convenient to have this in one hotel and in one building. And it shows the power of the lobbyists. Now, the lobbyists aren't all evil. They bring certain things to the attention of the legislators who might not know about them. But there's a give and take between the lobbyists giving money to the legislators for their campaigns and the legislators anticipating vote the way a particular lobbyist organization.
And the lobbyists, the big lobbyists, aren't all corporations.
No, they're not.
Isn't the teachers union the biggest lobbyist in Albany? Do you know?
I think it's the second largest.
Second largest.
Yeah, I think
1199. And other unions are 1199.
Right. And I say this as a former teacher. They are one of the biggest lobbyists, one of the most powerful groups.
Put on your headphones. We're going to hear from some listeners on this. Before I ask you the 64... million-dollar question, which is, can Eliot Spitzer or anyone else who comes in as governor actually change this system, or is it too much in his interest to keep it the way it is? But Bob in Manhattan, you're on WNYC.
Good morning, all. I'd like to just mention two words that send chills up the spines of all depressed professional politicians. Term limits. They would not be able to carve out their particular fiefdom. They would not be able to owe each other favors that last forever. And we would get a cleaner government.
Bob, thank you. Suzanne, term limits?
We haven't taken a position on term limits, and Seymour will speak to that otherwise. But our view is that if you reform some of these other attributes, if you get campaign finance reform in place, you have public financing, and you have redistricting reform, you have rules reform, you will have a system where legislators are accountable, and the public will see what they're doing, and people will be able to be voted out of office if the public doesn't like them. And, there's something to be said for having wisdom and experience in the legislature. So there are two sides to that coin of term limits.
Gordon in Douglaston, you're on WNYC. Hi, Gordon.
Thank you for my call. I absolutely agree with the term limits as an avenue to reform the courts, as well as a cap of perhaps, let's say, $500 on campaign donations and lobbying. Thank you very much.
I agree with that completely. I think it's disgraceful that we don't have term limits, that we don't have more amendments to the Constitution and even a constitutional convention. One has to realize if a legislator is in office 20, 30, 40 years, he or she becomes more connected to the lobbyists. Where there have been term limits, that connection doesn't arise until 6 or 8 or 10 years. It can be staggered term limits. People have to realize they had a job before, we assume, entering the state legislature, and there should be a job that they would be looking for afterwards, that this is not the end-all and be-all. I am very strongly in favor of term limits, and a study that I've made of various states that have term limits, we see a greater diversity. Women, more minorities, and it takes the lobbyists longer to get a hold of the legislators and attempt to influence them.
Lisa in Manhattan, you're on WNYC.
Yeah, this is on Hevesy. I don't know if there's another shoe that's going to drop, and he is controller. He should have been squeaky clean, but I find the reaction to what he did kind of disproportionate. He's basically done a good job. He's been pretty much on the level, and as you guys have been talking about corruption in this state, I mean, this was pretty small potatoes.
But here's a guy, Lisa, who's in charge of making sure that everybody keeps their fiscal houses clean around the state.
But, Brian, when your option is that Republican, who really is not qualified, is so clearly unqualified, I think we have a real problem here.
Well, that's going to be up to the voters. But Seymour Lachman, do you think that Alvin Hevesy's situation, which some people like Lisa, and I have other callers who want to do the same thing, want to dismiss as an aberration in an otherwise, you know, fine career full of integrity, do you think that the Hevesy situation is getting more attention and that there's more pressure placed on him because of the clean up Albany drive that is the main issue in this campaign?
Also because he is the chief fiscal officer of the state, who is responsible for hundreds of billions of dollars. I had mentioned $145 billion just in pension funds. It is very sad. Alan Hevesy is an intelligent, articulate person who has served the state very well in the past. But this is not an incident that has never occurred before. A similar incident, without as much money, was involved when he was New York City controller. And I think a situation such as this turns people off to the entire system. It's a dysfunctional system, and this shows that there must be change in the entire system.
So, Suzanne, getting back to the larger question, whether it's Elliot Spitzer or John Faso or my next guest, the Green Party candidate for Governor Malachy McCourt, what incentive does the new governor have to really fight this battle to change the three men in a room system, no matter what they say on the campaign trail? If they are one of the three men, do they want to dilute their own power? And do they want to alienate the all-powerful legislative leaders rather than focus on other agenda items, whatever they may be, health care, tax reform, whatever it is, that they may be more interested in getting through than legislative reform?
Well, I believe that whoever the next governor is, I mean, it's a time of change because we have someone new coming in and everybody's excited for the change. But in order to get those substantive reforms that you mentioned that everybody is clamoring for, it's in everybody's best interest. It is in the governor's best interest to have these structural changes so that good policy can get developed and it'll be better for New York State. I mean, whoever's in the governor's seat, he'll be voted on again in 4 years. And so things need to get done. And so it's to everybody's benefit to make these changes.
We have 30 seconds. Seymour Lachman, same question. You were in the state Senate. Yeah. How does the new governor come in and have a real incentive to do this, given the political price he might have to pay?
I know this man. He is a reformer. and he means business when he says he's going to attempt to reform the system.
You're assuming a Spitzer victory now.
A Spitzer victory, yes. And I also feel it's going to be very difficult and very tough and very rough. There's a chapter in Three Men in a Room about a 100-year period of governors fighting with legislators. Elliot Spitzer cannot accomplish this in 6 months or a year, maybe not even two or three or four or five or six or seven or 8 years. And we have to remember this. But we also should realize he is a first-class reformer, and he will do this in order to make the state more democratic.
Seymour Lachman's new book is Three Men in a Room, The Inside Story of Power and Betrayal in an American Statehouse, published by the New Press. Suzanne Novak is Deputy Director of the Democracy Project at the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU. Is your report available online?
It is. It is at www.brenncenter.org.
Thanks a lot to both of you for joining us. And I will say that we'll let other media wallow in the horse race. That's today's 30 Issues in 30 Days. We've got issues, and we know you do too. Tomorrow, issue 27, outsourcing the war in Iraq. What are the consequences? Did we have a choice? And coming up in a minute, the Green Party candidate for governor of New York, no less than Malachy McCourt. Stay with us. Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.